So we've really got some things happening in the Great Divide Basin as well. So yeah, we're right in amongst the hotbed of the resurgence in uranium mining in the US. And for anyone who knows the history, obviously, the US used to produce 40 odd million pounds back in the 80s. But in the last few years, there's been virtually no domestic production at all. And there's a lot of interesting history around why that is the case.
Bruce Lane, GTI Energy, good morning to you. Good evening to me. How are you, my friend?
Hi, Andy. Great to be with you. Our weather's probably the opposite to yours at the moment. We're about 40 degrees Celsius.
So if you were off camera, I would say a few choice words with you because I really hate the cold. So let's jump right in here. Let's get to who is GTI Energy. Let's tell all of our listeners about that, and let's have a discussion first. But first, we'll go there, and then we'll talk about the projects here. And what's interesting to me is you're this natural resource company in Australia, but you're in the U.S., which there's not a whole lot of you that do that. So let's there, Australia to the U.S. Tell me about the company.
Yeah, Andy, the company's been around, listed on the Australian Stock Exchange since 2007, was originally a gold company. We've transitioned the company to a uranium company. I mean, that's really kicked off back in 2019 when I joined the company, having vended in some assets that we had in Utah, which are essentially what our Utah projects. We've grown them and done things with them since then, but that was the genesis of our path into the uranium sector. You know, and I personally had been involved with a couple of uranium companies that had been pretty successful before Fukushima, and had been kind of biding my time watching what was happening with the climate change agenda and energy in general, and I couldn't see anything other than a positive future for nuclear eventually. And so we started off with our Utah assets back in 2020. Well, 2019, and then the company got a bit of airtime during 2020, and we got some love in our share price around the start of lockdown, and then from there we raised some money. We went on and staked some really interesting properties in Wyoming in the Great Divide Basin, and that really got us kicked off into the in-situ recovery uranium business in Wyoming. Then we acquired or staked some more projects off the back of that. And then we found the Low Herma project, which is our lead project in the Powder River Basin, 10 miles away from Cameco Smith Ranch Island. And that's really our focus at the moment, is in-situ recovery uranium project in the Powder River Basin.
Got it. So a few questions about that. And these I already know the answer to, and they seem rhetorical, but I just want to be very clear for all of our listeners and viewers out there. You are currently in Utah and Wyoming with your big project in Wyoming. And what I thought was really interesting to me from an investor point of view, you have some other really big projects. And if it's okay, I'll name drop you. UR Energy is right there. You just mentioned Cameco is right there. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I guess the two big production areas at the moment in Wyoming are the Powder River Basin and what is called the Great Divide Basin is kind of the Red Desert. They're very close to each other. They're only, a few, less than 100 miles away as a crow flies, certainly from each other. And so that forms, I guess, the main production area where there's current producing mines, mines getting back into business, and exploration projects all happening. I guess in the US, the other area is Texas for ISO, where you've got Encore Energy with Alta Mesa and Rosita back in production. And then from a hard rock point of view, you're kind of down in Utah around Energy Fuels at the White Mesa plant in Blanding, which is the only hard rock processing facility in the US. So you've got Colorado Plateau and Utah, where our hard rock projects are. So there's probably three big areas that are the focus at the moment. There's some other bits going on, but that's really where the main action is. And so our lead project there in the Powder River, that is really the bulk of what's the main area that's the seeing action at the moment with energy fuels. UEC has kicked off production at Christian Ranch, which is 40 or 50 miles up the road. Cameco's not producing next to us about 10 miles away in the Powder River. But we believe at some point that they will kick those projects into action. And then down in the Great Divide, it's really UR Energy in production, but UEC's just bought Rio Tinto's Sweetwater Mill and all the assets there. So we've really got some things happening in the Great Divide Basin as well. So yeah, we're right in amongst the hotbed of the resurgence in uranium mining in the US. And for anyone who knows the history, obviously, the US used to produce 40 odd million pounds back in the 80s. But in the last few years, there's been virtually no domestic production at all. And there's a lot of interesting history around why that is the case. And I could spend a lot of time talking about that if we want to dive into it. But the key point here is the US uses 50 million pounds of uranium a year at the moment, and that's without any growth, and really is producing next to nothing at a time when, you know, there's a ban on importation of Russian uranium and a retaliatory export ban. It's really an interesting time for uranium companies in the US with the AI revolution and all the other things you've seen going on.
Yeah, it really is an interesting time. And it's actually uranium in my own fund, in my own holdings. I do have allocations to it, but it's my lowest allocation, which is soon going to be going up higher just for all of our listeners. I'm very bullish on uranium, but it's a longer term play, if you would. But I guess really what my question is why, and I get these comments all the time and emails all the time with uranium running like it did, and it sold off here in the last 6 to 9 months, but running like it did, why haven't the stocks really followed, if you would, or what? They've just been hammered really in the last 6 to 9 months. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, it's been a volatile ride, and uranium has a history of volatility, which is great if you catch it at the right time. It can hurt if you've gotten it a little bit late and then suffer the downside of the volatility, obviously, and that's what we've seen, you know, particularly since say February last year. You know, the back end of 2023, early 2024, when uranium spot price went to $105, the stocks, pretty much all rose on the back of that, that dramatic increase at the back end of 2023. We were no exception. But what happened since then was, I think that created a lot of expectation the uranium price would stay at that level or go high. And what has transpired is that it's kind of the spot price in particular, which seems to be what everyone focuses on, particularly in the retail market, because it's not like gold, where there's kind of a very highly traded, transparent, despite all the derivatives, put that aside for 1 minute, or even iron ore, where you can kind of get a very transparent look at the price. The spot price is on a very thinly traded market, only a tiny proportion of traded or in spot, and it's a very, I would call it it's really a broken market. It doesn't function as, it's not an LME exchange traded market. So it's not a great indicator of the real value of uranium, because pounds are traded predominantly in long-term contracts, and those long-term contract prices are not very transparent to who them. So if 90% or 80 to 90% of the commodity is traded in long-term contracts, and they're all pretty much confidential, it's hard for people to get an understanding of the real value of a commodity. So what's happened with long-term contracting is it's been very, very, the price has held up very well. Long-term contracting volumes have been low, and we think they're going to come back, through the next few quarters. And we'll see, a growth in that price. But will it be transparent? Not necessarily. So look, I think that's one of the factors, is that we saw that spike in price, it's tracked back. And then also there's been a lot of broad market discontinuity and challenges in the broad market, which hasn't helped, the uranium stocks. And bearing in mind also, it's a relatively small market. You know, if you look at the traded market cap combined of all uranium stocks, it's kind of the, it's about a third of the size of a chocolate company trading on the NYSE. So it's, you know, you're talking, you know, $60, $70 billion. And of that, Cameco is a huge proportion of, and Cameco is a vertically integrated company. It's not just a uranium miner. It's so much more to Cameco than that. So it's a small sector. You get, when the big money flows want to come into uranium, there's only a few places they can really go to meet their daily volume and liquidity and new targets. And that's Cameco, Kazatomprom, the ETFs, URNM, URA, and then the Sprott Junior Miners, which is URNJ, and then maybe UEC. So, you know, what happens, the ETFs get a lot of money. The ETFs go and buy the index, the indices. That lifts anything that's in the indices. And a lot of the junior buyers aren't big enough to be in the indices and find it's kind of harder to catch it. And then everything goes down when the big money wants to leave those funds. And of course that hurts everybody. So we get the downs, but we don't get as much of the ups from the ETFs. So there's, look, there's a whole lot of reasons why it's volatile. But it is part of the environment. I don't see that going away anytime soon. It's going to be volatile.
Got it. So let me ask you this about specifically about GTI here. You're in Wyoming. You told me a little bit about the project here. Tell me about what is the plan moving forward. How are we going to get this in production? Give me a timeline, rough timeline, and just really the plan.
Yeah. So the we were able to acquire a database of drill holes a couple of years ago to the project. And we think that had a value of around sort of $10 to $15 million of a replacement. That gave us a running head start to be able to put a resource out. So we put an initial resource out around 5 million pounds just and verified the database, did some drilling to do that. Last year, we drilled another 70 odd holes and were able to upgrade the resource to around 8.5 million pounds, an exploration target on top of that. Of an additional 6 to 11 million pounds. So we've established a really good footprint and a good start, which we think justifies doing a scoping study. So we're doing a scoping study as we speak. Look, we've guided for that to be completed in the first half of this year. We think we can get it done a little sooner than June. We think we can, might even be able to get it done in March. And that sets up a project, an economic story around it, and you know, a bore field footprint and a development program. And then from there, you know, there's a little bit more development work to do the back end of this year in terms of drilling water monitoring holes, growing the size of the resource, a bit of infield drilling, and kicking off the permitting. And so that could put us on a path to be in production within the next few years. And it's a little hard to be accurate on that because, of course, you know, if we are fully funded and money wasn't an issue, we'd be able to be more confident about that timeline. But, you know, it is conceivable the project could be producing within the next 2 or 3 years. But the permitting time frame kind of dictates, you know, you've got to do groundwater monitoring, baseline studies is probably the main one. The flora and fauna and archaeological things, they're not a big challenge. We are in Wyoming. There's lots of projects around us. It's a very well-trodden path for permitting. It's all managed at the state level. Wyoming's one of four agreement states in the US, being Colorado, Texas, Utah, Wyoming are all responsible for their own permitting at the state level. They don't have to go to the federal government, which is why all the uranium mining incurs in those places. So we're confident about the support from the state and the path to permitting is well-trodden. There's no, we don't think there's any bogeyman out there, but it does take a period of time at this point, and we don't seem to be able to compress that. But if you look at the executive orders that have come out from President Trump in the last couple of days around energy, he's certainly pointing the way to accelerating natural resource projects of all kinds, but particularly in the energy space. So you know, that could be shortened if the capital is available to actually run that process. So short answer, a few years.
Got it. Okay, so we're looking, I'm going to ballpark this for myself and a couple of listeners, and all of our listeners, 2 to 4 years, 5 years, that's a good horizon to get a mining permit. That's what you would say would be very fair.
Yeah, I'd say, and you know, if you hit the middle of it, then it might be about right.
About 3.5. Got it. Okay. So let's talk about finances and share structure and shares. One of the things that, again, all those that are involved with junior mining, you know, that is a very capital intense business, meaning you got to spend a lot of money to make money. Tell me about that. Where are you guys at financially and what's the goal and what's the plan? And tell me about your share structure and not only where you're at with share structure, but what's the plan with your shares?
Yeah, so we've got around 3 billion shares on issue and we've got another 1 million options with a strike price of 1 cent. That I think probably expire at around 29. We got probably at the end of this quarter, we put out a quarterly report to the exchange at the end of each quarter. And at the end of December, we're likely to have something in the region of around $1.2 million. We're an ASX listed company, it's uncommon to have a few billion shares on issue, especially if you've been running a project and making progress, raising money, spending money. Obviously, everyone always wants to do it with an upward trending share price. And I guess that's been one of the challenges over the last 12 months, that even the biggest uranium companies, their share prices have tracked back a bit from January last year. And in the junior sector, we've had to wear that, and we need to raise money to continue to make progress. We've been able to do that, which gives us confidence that, you know, we've got an investor group who actually do support what we're doing in the project. In terms of what we do going forward to raise capital, there are a number of options out there that would hopefully be less dilutive. We've got a shareholding in another company, which we spun out. We spun our gold asset out in Australia into another company called Regenerate Resources. We hold 5 million shares in that company, so it's possible that we could divest those shares at some point to another party who's interested in that company. But the other thing that we're actively looking at is partnering with one of our neighbors potentially. I mean, it's not there's by no means a guaranteed solution there, but that is a possibility. We've got producer companies around us. They know how long it takes and how much they have to invest to grow a new deposit and get to the stage ours is at. And they are increasingly attracted to the idea and coming under pressure to supply more domestic uranium to the utilities in the US for a lot of obvious reasons. So we may present a pathway for one of our neighbors to accelerate a greater pipeline of production for their own existing plants. And there are a number of other parties trying to do the sort of thing that we're doing in Wyoming. They have stated objectives to grow their business and consolidate in that area, and they may be interested in working with us on our project. So we're at the stage where those conversations can start to be more, fully formed. And that's certainly something we're looking at going forward as a way to, you know, potentially fund the project without having to keep going back to our shareholders to carry the whole load.
Yeah, I got it. So that's you brought something interesting up. All the people I've talked to in a lot of the interviews, both on camera as well as off camera, they just mentioned something that you said, not only in the uranium market, but also just in the junior natural resource market. Well, more than likely see is a lot of consolidation in the next couple of quarters. Again, not projecting that on you, but that will lead to, if you're not consolidated somehow, it will lead to more than likely your share price is going up just because there's going to be less companies out there, if you would. So anyways, okay. Interesting. Anything that you want to leave our viewers with, or you'd like to tell them as far as getting exposure, and how can people buy you if they want?
Yeah, look, the stock is listed on the Australian Stock Exchange. I mean, a number of your viewers will be quite comfortable. The ASX is a very, very well regulated exchange with good liquidity and a lot of international participation. So, you know, it's renowned for being a good place for junior resource stocks. I think it's been better than the TSX over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I agree.
And so it is a good place to raise money and a good place to to have your shares listed. And as I say, very, very well regulated, and people can be reassured. We're also listed on the OTC under the ticker GTRIF, and we're working through trying to improve the liquidity on that exchange as we speak. Our shares are certainly available there, and those are the two primary ways to buy the company. I think what I would leave people with is that, you know, I have to, you know, I have to be completely honest to say the last 12 months have been quite painful if you look at the performance of the equities, and we're not alone in that, but it certainly hurts us, you know, because we do rely on the markets to be able to raise capital. But I am very confident this year, and certainly with Trump's inauguration and a lot of the what's been coming out of the White House. So if you look at his energy secretary, Chris Wright, you know, he's on the board of Oklo, which is an SMR developer. You know, Liberty Oil, I think the largest fracking company in the US. He's been up and down the chain in energy, both renewables and nuclear, through his career. Very focused on energy, very focused on getting nuclear really up and running again the way it used to be. And the same with Doug Burgum, governor in Dakota, who sold High Plains to Microsoft in the early part of his career, very much a tech guy, very much an energy guy, and very, very supportive of nuclear. Same set of the new EPA secretary, if he gets confirmed, and a treasury. They're all talking about supplying funding, supplying support, accelerating permitting, and getting the nuclear business going. And a lot of that is obviously to support AI, because if you look at the size of these AI projects and the amount of energy they need, it just is not available in the US at the moment. It'll be gas first, nuclear second. And I firmly believe that's what we'll see unfold. So I think I would say this, but I feel quite confident the time has never been better to be involved in uranium. I think you get great leverage out of these junior companies. We are one of the few companies, in fact, we're the only junior in Wyoming that has resource pounds in the ground. And we believe that the number of pounds that we have will support a commercial proposition for a scoping study. We've seen our neighbors develop projects of the size of Lohuma, around that 8 million pound mark. And we know they're focused on getting those into production, either as satellite projects or as full central processing plants. So I think the time is good. I think we're a unique proposition. I don't think the value of the company is reflected in our share price at all. I think we're trading well below any intrinsic value of the assets that we hold. And at some stage, we should be able to find a way to get some value into the hands of shareholders far and above what our share price is at the moment.
Excellent. Okay, Bruce, if you can give your website address again, and how people can reach out to you with any questions, that'd be great.
Yeah, look, it's www, old school, gtienergy.au. So not .com, not .com.au, but .au. And if you search on the OTC website, you'll find us there under OTC GTRIF. And if you go to the ASX website, you'll find us there under the code GTR. And if anybody wants to have any further conversations with me directly, ask me questions, please reach out to me. If you email info@gtienergy.au, I see all of those emails and I'll respond to anybody who contacts me on that info@gtienergy.au.
Got it. Excellent. Bruce, and also for all those listening, I just looked you up on Interactive Brokers. I use Interactive Brokers and you were listed there. So that could be a platform that you could use to buy GTI Energy. Bruce, I want to thank you so much for your time. I'll put everything that you said in the show notes there, how people can find you, your ticker symbols. And then, I'd love to have you on again in the near future to get an update.
Great. Thanks, Andy. I've enjoyed the conversation. And thanks for the opportunity to get in front of your audience.
You're welcome. Thank you.